In the modern world of technology, certain events should just never happen. One of those events is currently happening now. And you know what? It's really all your fault. Hi, my name's Ryan Holmes. My blog is univarn.blogspot.com. Univarn is spelled U-N-I-V-A-R-N because, let's be honest, it's not really a word. I made it up. And this is actually the first ever podcast I've ever done, and it's going to be sort of a bit of a trial and error for me here, so we'll see how it goes. I wanted to try and keep this very... informal. I don't want to be up here going, well, document number one, man walks down street. Nothing like that. And I wanted to just really sort of keep it casual, keep it friendly, keep it interesting. Granted, all the while, I have this screen up, which is just constantly flying across, and it's flashing my voice volume, which I'm an easily distracted person, and I find this fascinating, because it just goes up and down, up and down, up and down. Really, you can't beat that sort of commitment. But I've decided that I just have to start this thing. I have a random imagination. You'll probably notice that. I tend to slur words together because I talk fast. And you'll probably notice that. But I think it'll be entertaining. If not, you can turn it off. But if it isn't entertaining, you have to post a comment on my blog just saying how entertaining it was. One of the things I wanted to do with this blog was really sort of connect with people. I don't want to be, you know, the guy up there talking about, hello, I am Ryan Helms, and I know everything that ever is to know about movie. And that's a horrible voice, and I don't know why I tried to do that, and I should stop trying to do voices. But I think there's something to be said for that connection with people, and I wanted to talk first, with my first ever podcast, really about what sort of makes me do the things that I do. I mean, let's be honest. There's so much that occurs in daily life that it's hard to just... So what I'd like to try and do with this blog is sort of, in this podcast, is really to give you guys a little bit of a backstory on me. How did I get into movies? When did I first realize I was into movies? And we're going to kind of start with a little story. A few years back, probably, I don't know, 6 or 7 years back, we were at a neighbor's house. And it was a party, just a, you know, get together. The parents were getting together, and so by consequence, us kids were getting together. And my neighbor Marlene turned to me and looked at me in the eye and said, oh, what was that movie with Richard Gere where he's the lawyer guy? And was like looking at me, expecting me to know the answer. And I did. And it just sort of came to me that the movie was Primal Fear. And she gives back this sort of, wow, you always know movie trivia. I swear I should just ask you for movie trivia and stop trying to think of it on my own. And, well, it didn't really occur to me until then that, you know, I actually do know a lot of random movie stuff, and that I have watched probably way too many movies. And I sort of attribute that to a few years earlier. Before then, we had this local video store called Premier Video. And this was sort of right around the big transition from VHS to DVD. And they had all these VHS backlogged. And they had this over the summer, in which it was $5, 5 movies, 5 days. And it was during that time that I really got to see a lot of the essential movies. I got to still watch your Godfathers, you know, your Butch Cassidy and your Sundance Kid, The Sting. A lot of those kinds of movies. And I think that was sort of the time when I really sort of realized that I was into movies. I watched those constantly nowadays. I mean, I've got Butch Cassidy sitting up here right in premium spot for grabbing. It's one of the movies I often go to because I just think it's so entertaining and captivating. And I really think that was the night that I sort of fell in... the summer that I really fell in love with movies. I really sort of gained an appreciation for them. And I realized that, honestly, I could sit around all day long watching movies and be a happy person. And there's not a lot of people who can be that. I think certain people are just active, and I'm lazy, so you always got that going for you. And I think there's a certain passion about movies that bloggers have that I've always appreciated. But of course, that always kind of comes with a little bit of a downside. Sometimes passion can overwhelm the desire to relate to people who don't agree with you. I've known a lot of people who blog, who, when I post a movie review that for a movie they love, they go, and I didn't like it that much, they're sitting there going, oh my god, how can you hate that movie? What's wrong with you? And it's nothing's wrong with me. It's just that there's no two people who contain that sort of same feeling towards a movie. I mean, when I really love a movie and I go read someone's post and they didn't like it that much, I feel kind of down. It's sort of like, oh, I can't believe you didn't like it, really. But I understand that there's no two people in the world that are alike. We're all products of a million different things. We may have the same likes and dislikes, but the odds are that the reasons why we like and dislike them are so different. And so I think there's something to be said for that. And I don't want to get on this tangent, but I tend to get on tangents, so I apologize ahead of time, or, well, behind the time, either way you want to look at it. But I had a few things I wanted to talk about with this. And one of them is actually something that came out today. The National Board of Review released their picks for the best films of the year. And of course, if you follow this sort of stuff at all, you know, last year Slumdog Millionaire won, and the year before that, No Country for Old Men won. And so usually the film that wins this is, you know, jumps right up to the top of the Lusk, right at Las Vegas betting tables. But I think that it's really interesting this year, as they really didn't have a coherent sort of single film. I was very surprised to see Carey Mulligan won for Best Actress. I wouldn't have thought of that. I've heard she's very good in the film and in Education. I won't get to see it for some time, but that's really interesting. I mean, one thing I did notice that really surprised me is the real lack of Precious. I mean, I figured Precious would probably come in here and just be like, Oscar, 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 and then everyone would just pretty much every single thing leading up to that, just it's guaranteed Oscar would occur. But they actually really well divided it. Eastwood won Best Director, Freeman Actor, Mulligan Actress, Harrelson Supporting Actor, which is something I really didn't expect. But I think this is kind of the Woody Harrelson comeback year. Last year it was Robert Downey Jr. This year I think it's Woody Harrelson. People starting to realize Woody Harrelson a little bit more. That was kind of helped by Zombieland. Who didn't love Zombieland? I mean, come on. Granted, I didn't, you know, wet myself over it like I've seen some bloggers do, just like screaming in excitement. It's the greatest movie ever made. I can't believe zombies and there is violence. Ah! But it was pretty standard as zombie movies go. Very funny, kind of a little cheesy B movie-ish at times, and I loved it, but I didn't love it that much. Moving on. It was really interesting though to see sort of the choices they made. Best foreign film, The Prophet. I haven't seen that. Best documentary, The Cove, which I can't be surprised about. I mean, when it comes to documentaries, it's always kind of a hard thing to look at because so many of the really great documentaries and foreign films get the kibosh at the come Oscar time. And so when you go back and you look at, oh, what was the best documentary that year? You go to the Oscars and you go, huh? And it's because I think it's that on some level. It's also sort of interesting. Best Ensemble Cast was It's Complicated, the upcoming Meryl Streep and Alec Baldwin, which also features Steve Martin, who I've always loved. And I just feel like Steve Martin's sort of like that Steve Martin, Chevy Chase category where they're so funny, but they just haven't made good movie choices for so long. And Eddie Murphy, I'd even put in that. Like, what happened to these guys? They were so funny for so long and so good. And it's just like, where did they go? What happened? Did they forget something? Did they forget how to find comedies? I mean, Eddie Murphy's stuck in like D family movie hell. Steve Martin did the Cheaper by the Dozen remakes, which were both awful, awful, awful films. And Chevy Chase, I mean, he's kind of stuck on doing the Community show on NBC. Who would have thought that, you know, 20 years ago that Chevy Chase would be the second or third lead on a TV on a mediocre TV show on NBC. Don't get me wrong, Community is actually kind of funny, but that's because I'm a big fan of Joel McHale, and Chevy Chase kind of provides that same sort of creepy old guy attitude. But moving on, I want to talk about one movie I saw this past week. It was The Station Agent, which was part of my little ongoing great movies nobody saw, and it was recommended to me by This Time It Will Be Different. Whose blog is This Time It Will Be Different.blogspot.com. It's all one word. He's a great blogger. He's probably followed me longer than most of the people on my blog, but and it was a really quality film. I mean, Peter Dinklage, who's sort of made his way around, plays Finbar McBride, who's, you know, a dwarf, and that sort of chronicles his journey. He's worked for his long time friend Henry at a train menu, like a train model store, and they watch train movies and really sort of a life about trains. And well, when Henry passes away, he inherits a small piece of land, and he kind of goes to live there and tries to get away. But he befriends these two guys, Joe and Olivia. Joe is Bobby Cannavale. I can't really say his name very well. Sorry about that. And Patricia Clarkson plays Olivia. And it really sort of about the troubles they encounter, how much they actually need each other. Joe is sort of the epitome of the upbeat guy. Just everything is so great. I can't believe I'm doing this. It's so much fun. And he has fun just sitting there for hours, waiting for a train to come. And there's a scene in the film where he's first doing this and he's throwing rocks and he's all excited and waiting. And then this train comes and it's like three carts long and that's it. And he's like, what? Ah! But it's really a lot of fun. And it's sort of an amazing, nice little see character dynamic. Peter Dinklage has always been a fine actor. He's really good in those sort of subtle roles. Not one of those, he's not your Daniel Day-Lewis. He's not gonna, break down in tears and screaming and ah. But, he's got such, I think, a good emotion about him, just general smooth emotion, that I think it really allows him to work. And of course, Patricia Clarkson is a great actress, and I'm kind of sad that I missed this film when it came out back in 2003. But it really is a fine movie. It's a little slow. And my one qualm about it, my one little grump, would probably be the ending. There's a sort of moment where, Finn kind of starts falling for the librarian who's played by Michelle Williams. And there's, you kind of start feeling, all right, this is always really starting to pick up. It deals with Patricia Clarkson. Her character is, well, just had a divorce and her husband's remarried. And, she's overcoming the death of her son. And there's a lot of sort of that. And it sort of just wraps it all up in like one little, let's get a group hug, end. And it's just, I don't know, I felt really sort of underwhelmed by that, but it's not that bad. I mean, it was really entertaining. It was a lot of fun. There were some great laughs in it. Peter Dinklage was hilarious in Death at a Funeral, and he's a lot more of kind of a dark, kind of somber comedy. Most of the jokes sort of come from the character Joe, and I would recommend it. I mean, if you haven't seen it, it's a good film for a pickup. If like a Saturday or afternoon or a Sunday afternoon, nothing much to do. I think it's a good movie for that. I wouldn't say it's one of those run out, see and own films, but it has all the qualities you'd probably want out of a movie. And next, I want to talk about a little bit. This past week, if you followed my blog at all, you noticed we did the 1001 Movies Club, which is also the 1001 Movies to See Before You Die Club, also 1001 Movies to See Club. There's 100 names for it. But basically, it's a group of about, I think, 10 or 12 bloggers, depending on activity and when you can and can't post. And the whole thing of which was just sort of put together by The Answer MVP. And he's bought this book called 1001 Movies to See Before You Die. And it has, well, guess what? 1,000 more movies you should see before you die. And so, we're gonna try. But granted, we're doing 4 movies a month, times that by 12 months in a year, it's going to take a while. We'll probably be in our 60s by the time we're done with it. Granted, by then, we'll probably all be uploading computers while we're on our sleep. So, there's always that to look forward to. The movies we did this week were Vampire, The Apartment, Raising Arizona, and Requiem for a Dream. I'm not going to call out who recommended these movies, but to be honest, if I had recommended them, I probably would have recommended The Apartment. My recommendation was for the next month. I did 8.5 because I haven't seen it. Figured it'd be a good pickup. And I want to talk about it. It's rather interesting looking at the results for this because if you look at it, we have Vampire and Raising Arizona, which we all sort of maintained the same attitude towards. It was very much a split. Vampire averaged a score of 6, Raising Arizona averaged a score of 5, and I'd say that sort of represents how I feel about the two of them. I mean, Vampire I thought was such a visually captivating film that I would watch it again for that, but there was just no story, the characters were flat, the acting was rather mediocre, and I don't know how much you can attest to the fact that the original copy of it was lost years and years ago, and so we're really just sort of watching what I would consider a best guess of it. But Carl Dreyer's just really has a knack for mood, I'd say. It's so good at it that I really would recommend it just for that power in the mood, that sort of ability to elevate a scene just by tone and setting and all these little creepy moments, like the dancing Oh, the dancing shadows on the wall with no bodies. You know, that's such an eerie thing. And nowadays, you know, movies go for that. Oh my God! You know, some character jumping out from behind you and screaming. And, yeah, that doesn't do much anything for me. I mean, you can almost tell when it's gonna, you can tell every time it's gonna happen because all of a sudden the music gets quieter. And then they jump out at you! You know, I mean, who's sitting there at home going, "Oh my God, I didn't see that coming"? Well, it's the same people who do it every time, and probably go watch those movies every time because they just can't figure that out. Apparently, I don't know. I'm not a big fan of cheap thrills. And then we have the other movie was Raising Arizona. I'm not a big Nick Cage fan. I like him in some movies. I thought he was good in the first National Treasure. The second one, it was a bit cheesy. Well, cheesier. Well, I'm not sure he could be much cheesier, but I like the first National Treasure enough, and I kind of like him at times, but when it comes to just like acting in this movie, his character talks really slowly. He takes a long time. It reminded me a lot of like the Ents from Lord of the Rings. I just kind of expected Treebeard to come out, Andy Serkis to be behind him going, "Ha-ha!" Actually, no, I think John Rhys Davies actually did that voice, so never mind, John Rhys Davies should come out. And you know what? John Rhys Davies would make that movie better. In Raising Arizona, I just didn't like it. I like John Goodman. I like Holly Hunter. I like William Forsythe. And I like some of the Coen Brothers stuff. But Raising Arizona just felt like someone said, "Hey, let's make a movie about something entirely random." And the Coen Brothers were obviously there going, "We can do that." The scenes don't feel connected. They don't feel connected to really anything. I'm not even sure that they make sense within the confines of the movie. You know, the movie goes from a rather just silly story to a ridiculous story to a story that just doesn't make any sense at all. And by then, I'm just sitting there going, "All right, I get it, Coen Brothers. You like that, do that stuff." The one thing that I've always disliked about the Coen Brothers is I've never been a fan of their endings. You know, I mean, Intolerable Cruelty, which I thought was hilarious. The first time I watched it, I was dying laughing. And then it has probably the cheesiest, most anti-Intolerable Cruelty ending. How do you have an ending that's happily ever after on a movie that's about how crap about people who cheat each other out of money in marriage? I mean, it's just like, I don't know. It just annoyed me to no end. And I don't need to go into that, but the Coen Brothers are such a mixed bag with me. You're tossing a coin on whether or not I'm actually gonna like their movie. The other movies that we did was first was A Requiem for a Dream, which is actually number 33 on my top 100 films, and I think it's one of the great movies I'd never want to watch again. Encores Entertainment is another blog, and he recently did a post about a movie like Apocalypse Now, I think it was, and he talked about there's some movies that he can admire so much but never want to watch a second time, and I think and even The Dark of the Matinee, which is mcneilmatinee.blogspot.com. Sorry, I'm trying to remember that. He talked recently about with this movie that there's some movies you don't want to have to watch a second time. And Requiem for a Dream is not a movie I can really picture myself wanting to watch over and over again. And it's really for that last 30 minutes, that sort of destruction of all that they've built. And it's really a self-destruction. But one of the things that makes Requiem for a Dream such a great movie is that it's really about the characters. It's not about, you know, the drugs. It's not about, you know, how cool and hip and edgy these things are. It's showing you characters who are drug addicts, not because of the drugs themselves, but because they have such problems in their own life that they just attach themselves to drugs as a medium for that. Trying to connect to something, I think, in a sense. And it's really relevant, I think, in today as we sort of move towards what I think will probably eventually being some drugs becoming legalized, or everything becoming illegal, whichever way you think it's gonna go. But with that coming on, there should be some people who watch, and I actually own Requiem for a Dream, and there's a reason I own it, and I own it sort of as a reminder of why I don't do drugs. And if I ever meet people who just say that, you know, drugs aren't that bad, I kind of show this movie to them, and I say you should take this movie with a grain of salt, but you should also really appreciate that this movie's trying to tell you something. It's trying to tell you that drugs aren't cool, they aren't edgy, and especially the hardcore ones, heroin and speed and that sort of stuff. Yeah, they're not the kind of drugs you just take and go, you know, "I'm gonna take this on a Friday, by Monday I'll be fine." It just doesn't happen. And then the other film we watched, which is almost the exact opposite of Requiem for a Dream, well, kind of, The Apartment, which is a movie I love. It has Jack Lemmon, which guarantees, at least on some level, I'm going to love it. He's in, like, my top 15 actors. I think he's great. Everything he does, I admire and appreciate. There's few actors I want and enjoy watching as much as Jack Lemmon. And in this movie, the chemistry between him and Shirley MacLaine is to die for. Billy Wilder really, I think, sort of hit the chemistry jackpot when he put Shirley MacLaine and Jack Lemmon on screen together. And then you sort of counter that with Fred McMurray, who sort of always had a very quirky style to his acting, I think. If you ever watch him in the Flubber movies, he's always sort of had that sort of zany attitude, and here he's, the bad guy. He's the evil Mr. Seldrake. And I think that's funny to watch, and since, especially if you know him from other movies. But at the same time, it's really interesting watching, Jack Lemmon's C.C. Baxter, who is such a character who's lonely and has never really. The one love of his life was married to his best friend, and you have Shirley MacLaine's friend Kublik, who the only guy she really I wouldn't say loves, but is with, treats her horribly. He's having an affair with his wife on her. He's not that nice of a guy. He keeps promising her, "I'll leave my wife and I'll love you forever," but he doesn't. And he sort of strings her along as long as he can, and then when he can't do it any longer, he leaves her and dumps her. And I think it was nice sort of seeing the culmination of these two romances, though this romance, not two, this romance come together. And of course, it's such a sweet romance, and it's so much fun, and I think that it's elevated so much that you just kind of puts a smile on your face. That last line, "Shut up and deal." I think it should just be one of those things that everyone should have to watch. Everyone in the world, I think, in high school should have to watch The Apartment and Requiem for a Dream. They're not my favorite films of all time, but there's a reason behind that. Because everyone should see romance through true tragedy, not, "Oh, I broke a nail, will you marry me?" Films like Ugly Truth and that sort of stuff. And at the same time, they should see real tragedy. Because I think so many people look to film for escape that they actually forget that film has the ability to represent and display real life. I mean, think about how many things in life are affected by movies. The way we talk about entertainment, the way we view what's cool and not cool, even though cool is a horrible term to use, is really sort of built about movies. I mean, there's so much to that. And The Apartment and Requiem for a Dream are just great examples of polar opposite cinema that can show good messages to people. I mean, we don't need, to be beat down with horrible tragedies every day. But there's a great little quote from Jimmy V, who was a NC State basketball coach. If you've never heard his speech, you should go YouTube it. It's an amazing tearjerker speech. But he talks about in it that every day you should do three things. You should laugh, you should cry, and you should be immersed in thought. If you can do those three things every day, you've lived a hell of a life. And there's so much to that. And I think there should be something. You should be moved to tears. And that tears can be anything, emotional happiness, emotional sadness, but you should be. And sometimes you have to feel a little bit of pain. And these movies do both. They will move you. The Ellen Bernstein story and her weight loss, the show she's trying to go on, it's kind of amusing and a little random and weird. And it works in that. And at the same time, it's a tragedy. Both of these films have tragic characters. And they make you think. They really do. And that's, I think, a quality of a great film. They do those three things. They make you laugh, they make you cry, and they immerse you in thought. That's something that cinema has the power to do when done correctly. And that's something I admire. And with that great note, it's probably a horrible note, but I'm going to end this first podcast just so that I keep it under 30 minutes, and Fletch, whose Blog Cabin's blog, will be happy. Of course, he might be bored by now and changing. But to be honest, I thought it was fun. I hope it went well. I hope you can listen to this and sort of get a connection and feel. If you want to leave a comment, please do so at univarn.blogspot.com. That's my blog. And if you want to ask questions, you can ask them there. If you want to ask me why I liked the movie, why I didn't like a movie, comment on the quality of the blog, of the podcast, or the blog, doesn't really matter. I'm having a lot of misspeaks. You can do that there. I mean, the point of all this is interaction. I don't do this for myself. I don't do this for anybody. I just do this because it's something I enjoy doing, and I enjoy that feedback. Positive or negative, let me know what you think. I'm gonna wrap this up. My name's Ryan. This has been fun, and that's the end.